With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod, the final ep for this year. We come back again next year. But why not finish the year, this time around, with a bit of chat about the laws and how the game's going, and we can do that with no better person than Ben O'Keefe, New Zealand rugby referee, of course, James Parsons, with us as usual. Ben, let's start. You've got a New Zealand, you know, silver fern on your chest there, and you got to referee the All Blacks. Like, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen, a Kiwi refereeing the All Blacks.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, it was pretty amazing. I've had to dust this off now because I can finally wear it again. But yeah, it was just, you know, it's been a weird year. And out of weird years that we've had, we've, you know, had an opportunity where, you know, we had to have, you know, non-neutral referees referee international test matches. It was interesting because I think, like, not a lot of people realise that you actually can't referee your own nation. Mm. So, you know, I've gone through refereeing Super Rugby and, you know, you can referee, you know, teams in New Zealand, but, you know, as soon as you referee test matches, you can't referee the All Blacks. So, yeah, this year in Australia, I got to referee the All Blacks versus the Wallabies at ANZ Stadium, and it was pretty incredible.
How do you approach that? Obviously, you know, you've always got eyes on you as a referee, and there's everyone wanting to be critical of you, but, you know, you could be accused of nepotism pretty easily as a Kiwi refereeing the All Blacks. What was your mindset to approaching, you know, that kind of thing where Aussies are going to look at you like, oh, it's a Kiwi ref making that decision?
Yeah, like I think with refereeing, it's sort of lose-lose anyway. So, you know, you add refereeing your own country on top of that as well. I mean, there's always going to be, you know, outcomes of a game that people are going to question. It was interesting because, like, the main thing between the referee, we had four referees that were going to referee their own country. So myself, Paul Williams, Angus Gardner and Nick Berry from Australia. So we were in a series where, look, we're going to have to, you know, have those talks and discussions. So, we had to sit down and actually plan, okay, how are we going to do this? How are we going to referee our nation? But also how are we going to, you know, deal with, you know, everything that happens afterwards. So a lot of it was just around, look, it is just another game of rugby. You know, test matches happen so quickly that actually you can't, you know, you're referring what's in front of you. So it's very easy, you know, not to get caught up in, you know, who's actually, you know, at that tackle, who you're actually penalising. So it was really like the emotion before the game, you know, hearing the national anthem, seeing the haka. Normally we're overseas, you know, I'm normally refereeing in South Africa, watching the All Blacks because we're about to do a test series with South Africa, France, or, you know, South Africa, Wallabies. So, you know, all that emotional stuff beforehand was quite interesting. You know, that's something we talked about. And fortunately, I was the third game in a row. So, you know, we already had the first game that was done in Wellington, second game that was done in Eden Park. So I've sort of already gone through that experience. And then when I got out there in ANZ Stadium to do my game, it was a lot easier in terms of, you know, just those peripheral things. Because as soon as we blew the whistle, you know, we're just straight into the game, and, you know, it happened so quickly that, you know, it was hard not to, you know, realise who was actually, you know, you're refereeing.
Was it shaped that way to make you the third test so that, I suppose, it wasn't as a foreign environment rather than, say, the first test you just put out there straight away?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, Paul had to do the first test, New Zealand referee, so I think, you know, that was difficult for all of us because there was a lot of just unknown. You know, we know how to build up for a test match. We know how to referee a test match really well. But that unknown part was actually you're doing it in Wellington, you know, where I live actually. Yeah. So I've never actually, you know, got my gear out in Wellington to be able to do that. I've always been overseas, so all of that kind of stuff was new. So there was a lot of things that was, you know, we tried to, you know, put things in place to help us in that environment. But until you actually get out there and do it, like, we just didn't know. Yeah. So it was easier, you know, by the time that I had to do my game.
The game itself, the test match you reffed, obviously a few challenging decisions, obviously with the yellow cards and in the air. Was that hard? You know, they're quite big decisions, and they were both really early in the game.
Yeah.
Was that a challenging, sort of time for you?
Yeah, like reflecting on that, it was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, normally you tell yourself, okay, I'm going to get ready to make it. If I have to make a big decision off the first whistle, I've got to do that. You know, and sometimes you can't afford to, take 5 minutes to get into a game, just like a player. You've got to get in there for off the first kickoff. So I think there was a collision in the air, like two minutes in.
Yeah.
And I remember just like rolling my eyes, being like, okay, here we go. This is pretty typical, we've got to step up to this. And I think that's why you work on processes, you just get into your process around foul play and, the structure that you go through, just like any other game. And, made me, make the right decision, whether you're wearing a Wallabies jersey or an All Blacks jersey. And so we were able to get through that game by doing that, because I think another 2 minutes later we had another yellow card.
Throat,
and then we had a try decision for Dane Coles. Mm. And then there's a Shannon Frizzell yellow card at the end of the game. So
it was
a proper test match, but it was just the way that things go. You know, you just got to go out there, you got to referee what's in front of you. And it doesn't really matter what jersey they're wearing.
Mm.
But it was funny. So at the end of the game, I think Jordy Barrett went through and he scored that try like from 50 metres out. It was a pretty awesome try. And we maybe had about 3 minutes to go. And Brad Weber was the water boy.
Yeah.
And so we're like lining up the conversion and he sort of offered me a drink. And he was like, I've been like, how is that refereeing the All Blacks? This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And like, I really wanted to go to him, mate. Like, this is awesome, how good, And it was 2 minutes to go. And, can I have your jersey? Let's swap.
Don't give him a low five.
No, because I've already got in trouble with that before. But I had to realise, I'm wearing a microphone and, there are perceptions that you have to be aware of. So that's something we had discussed as a team beforehand with the referees. Just got to, be that referee for the whole 80 minutes. And I remember my answer to him was like, mate, it's just like any other game.
Yeah.
I gave him a bit of a wink and then moved on. But it was a great experience. Like, I don't know if it will ever happen again.
Really?
Well, it just depends,
It seemed quite successful, though, when you guys, you talk about sort of travel costs and stuff, and then you guys were as that group. Like, it just seemed like we can move past that, that neutral mindset, because it worked well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, we went through a series, but you had a lot of tough decisions. But we were able to work together as one sole group for that whole time. And I think that definitely had an impact on the game. We were able to actually try and, review the decisions and work well for the next game too. So, look, I feel like we have shown that it is successful. And I guess, in the future, if things like that happen again, at least we've got that option now. For World Rugby if they want to make that decision.
Because I think from a player's point of view, because of that consistency of their group, you guys knew each other's strengths and weaknesses, and the sharpness of decisions and standards from week to week were just so consistent that there was no room or grey area to push the boundaries. You knew what was coming, and you either worked towards that or not.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys felt that, but from a viewing point of view, it certainly looked like the four of you were extremely sharp on knowing each other's strengths, but also helping out where they are not as strong with the main guy in the middle.
Yeah, look, we all learned a hell of a lot. We were together for 5-6 weeks, and so normally what happens in a test match is like if I'm refereeing on a Saturday, I might be up in Europe and I'll get a French assistant referee to fly in on the Friday. Then an English referee, assistant referee to fly on, and then the Saturday morning as well. So you meet each other really late.
Mm-hmm.
You do the game, then after the game, you head home again. So, yeah, it was really unique that we actually got to spend 5 weeks together. It was like a mini World Cup campaign.
Mm.
And you're right, so the four guys that we had, we rotated referee, assistant referee, and TMO. Like, that was new, being in the TMO box for the first time. So we rotated that, and you're right, so we were able to review together, we were able to preview the game together. And it did mean that, we were able to, challenge each other on decisions that we made, talk about philosophies. And I think, game by game, you saw that teamwork strengthen.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of behind-the-scenes chat around, okay, how can we get better? Why do we miss that offside? How can we get better at that? And we could actually tweak that stuff between each games rather than, having to fly back home and then go back to the Southern Hemisphere and being in different time zones. So the fact that we were able to do that like a team, a mini team of five referees, I think it really helped, So I know we all learnt a lot, Paul, Nick, Angus and I over the last sort of 6-7 weeks. Not just refereeing your own country, but actually the game of rugby and how to referee. It was really good.
On a personal level, does it make you a little bit happier, being part of a group rather than being a guy who's jumping here, then jumping there and kind of doing your own thing week by week?
Yeah, for sure. I think trust is a big thing.
Sure.
When you go into a test match, there could be 60,000 people there and, you just want to, you're out in the middle. And for years it's been a pretty lonely environment. You've got, you know, captains yelling at you, you've got players yelling at you.
No.
So, when you've got like guys that you trust on the sideline giving you advice, you know, the game does happen so quickly now that you can't see everything. So when you've got the boys telling you, look, mate, that was a knock on or that was an offside, it really helps the game, you know. So hopefully then people just don't even notice you because, you know, you've actually got all the decisions correct. You can't do that by yourself. You need the four guys involved.
So then are you guys writing a letter to World Rugby, to New Zealand Rugby? Like, what's the next step in trying to make this happen if it's so much better than it used to be?
Well, look, I think, you know, the way that we did it over the Tri-Nation series, you know, we have reviewers with World Rugby after every game. And, you know, part of their constant feedback was, guys, like, this is going good. You know, there's still things that we need to work on, and yet we put a hand up to that for sure. But I think, as I said, you know, we've created a blueprint. They've seen that and they saw the success of that. And I think when they go away and, you know, look at obviously travel and, you know, how they're going to do games, you know, they can see that, look, that is something we can do in the future. But like anything, it comes down to money, comes down to logistics. You know, it's a big, it's a global competition. You know, once we get back to normality, around trying to get, you know, the best referees involved in the top game. So we'll just have to see, you know. But if they offer us to do that again, then yeah, 100% I'd be pretty keen.
There's been a bit of a major for you this year. You guys are so used to travelling and being away from home so often. You had Super Rugby Aotearoa where you were close. You've only really been to Australia to referee elsewhere. Has it been a major hit to your lifestyle and the way you're used to living?
Yeah, it's been weird. Like, you know, all of a sudden I've, you know, no excuses for the lawn getting too long and, you know, like, you know, fix some DIY stuff around the house. But I think, you know, normally we're away for, you know, 200 days of a year. Because we actually, you know, we have to travel, and because we haven't been able to referee your own country, we never really have home games. So to go from that, you know, I was, before COVID hit, I was in Rome, then went to Cape Town, and then the next week was in London, and then we came back, and that's when the borders closed. So since then, I've been home. Where normally in that time, I would have gone back to, you know, Australia a few times. I would have gone to, you know, for a 3 or 4 week stint in South Africa, even Argentina. So you travel a lot, and then hopefully, you know, we get back to a bit more Melody next year and, you know, get some really good Super Rugby happening.
Oh, yeah.
Get Blues your airports
victories,
back up.
What?
Blues victory.
Oh, sorry.
You're flying to Eden Park for a final by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I know. Well,
that's already booked.
I've moved down here now, so it's fine. We'll be able to see what happens.
You have to get those air points back up. I'd imagine you're gold elite by a long way.
Mate, I've definitely fallen by the wayside now. You know, I've been writing emails saying, look, can I keep my gold elite? No, mate, you're going to pump down the cattle class out the back of the plane.
Back to Jade.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Jade, yeah, that's what it was.
You'd be sitting in the lounge with the plebs using the vending machine soon.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
Buying your own coffees.
It's tough life.
Yeah, that's real tough. What do they do with you? Do they put you in business class? Do they chuck you in 5-star hotels? Like, well, how sweet is the... Are you like the fish heads who are getting all the good stuff?
We do get pretty good stuff. Like, you know, we're obviously athletes.
I think you have to,
well, yeah. You know, we've got to... Yeah. We do fly business class, so we're going up to the north. Luckily for me, you know, like, it means I can stretch out and sleep, but you definitely notice a difference because you land... You arrive maybe on a Tuesday before a Saturday test match. So it normally takes about 2 or 3 days to acclimatise. So if you're stuck in cattle... that's pretty tough. So they do look after us really well. So fly us business class, and you know, we do get to, you know, stay in some pretty good hotels.
Do you have GPS? Do you know how far? Because you'd run a bit in the game, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. So we run about, I think, 8 to 9 kilometres a game.
That's good going.
Which is up there, but you know, it's not. It's different. It's a lot of, you know, start stop stuff, and you know, if we get tired, we can just, you know, blow a scrum. You know.
Yeah.
So it's pretty easy when you can control that.
But. You can just rely on players like me, mate.
I'll just knock on. Thanks, James. I need a knock on, please.
You ever insisted on a reset just to get your breath back?
No.
Normally the front rows are doing the resetting, mate.
I guess the front rows and the referees, we sort of got a little eye for each other, so we know.
We'll just reset that one.
Yeah.
What kind of fitness do you do? Because you've obviously got to be sound of mind in the 79th minute like you are in the first. So you've got to be fit to make sure you're making those right decisions and you're not fatigued. What does your training week look like?
Well, you nailed it. Like, that's, you know, we don't have to be the biggest, the fittest, the strongest, the fastest. Like, we've actually just got to have, you know, a clear mind, you know, be fit enough to run, you know, get to that 7.5Ks and still be able to make those game-defining decisions at the end. Because that's what we're remembered for, you know. That's how the game is. You know, we might make an error maybe in the first 5 minutes, but if we make that error in the last five, you know, that's when you have the headlines. So look, we do a lot of, so our midweek training is, you know, a lot of interval running, you know, just trying to replicate the game. So, you know, we do like the Bronco test that a lot of players do.
What do you get?
I like to say I was sub 4:30, but most of the referees can go 4:40.
Struth!
I think did Bodie get?
He got 4:12 or 4:11.
Yeah, no, that's rapid. So we can definitely do the running, but So we do a lot of that. The gym work isn't to get big. You know, we're not trying to be massive, but it's just injury prevention. You know, so we do have a trainer, and you know, they'll give us things to do every day leading into a game. Mm. We've got to make sure the body's right for the match, and then recover well as well. You know, it's all important so that we can actually go out and put a good performance on. Obviously, you know, keep up with play as well, so we can, you know, be at the tackle to make a right decision. But we don't have to stay onside, so we can run sort of those lines that, you know, we're out of the way. And yeah, that's something you do have to learn over time as well.
Like, is that hard without not getting in that passing channel, especially when you're trying to ref the breakdown, and then, you know, then players naturally will look where the ref is because that potentially could be a weak point in the defence.
Well, do you know what? Like, I've always thought, you know, players should run at us more. You know? You should do a little bit of work on the referee and where they stand.
Yeah.
Because there's a few of us that I think that, you know, run a pretty good blocking line.
Especially around that heart area or that, you know, like, around the breakdown.
5 metres out from the goal line, you go through. Because I think in law, you know, if you don't touch the referee, actually, we had that a few years ago with, I think the All Blacks scored a try where one of the players was blocked in Dunedin.
Yeah.
So it is under law. So maybe that's something.
I always panic as a defender when the ref's like around me, because all I think is if I was someone seen that I'm trying to get out of the way of the ref, I'm like, oh, move, you're in my way, you're in my way, you're
in my
way.
Well, that's the thing. I'm sure you've yelled that at me heaps of times. Yeah. Like, so we do a lot of work on our positioning. So, but now hopefully it's kind of subconscious. Like, you get into you're watching the tackle, but you get into like a just in front of the D-line position so you can move in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, constantly players like, hey, you get out of my way, get out of my way. And I'm saying, yeah, well, you know, like, just give me half a second, you're out of the way. But, you know, you're right. Like, as a player, I guess you want to have, like, full peripheral. You want to see a view of everyone coming at you and not just the ball. So there's a lot of work around that, and certainly, you know, position-wise. And, you know, we had to adjust this year because there seemed to be a lot of moves around the back of the line out now.
Mm.
And often we stand at the back of the line. You know, you're probably sick of watching us at the back of the line. That's where we stand. And with those moves, you know, often we'd get caught there. So
as long as you pull it straight, I'm fine, mate.
Throw darts real straight, don't you?
Beautiful, mate.
Fine.
Beautiful.
Never an issue with your throwing.
Yeah. just going to game day itself, like, I'm always interested, do you guys keep track of, like, penalty counts or what sort of penalties or at halftime? Is there like a coach that would say, oh, this is what's trending, or these are things you're missing, or do you just go as a group?
Just as a group mainly. Like, we have to, so we don't have our coaches. We have coaches, but we don't have coaches at the ground, and we have to have our cell phones obviously have to be off, so we can't get any messages from coaches. Mm. So a lot of referees, we do keep penalty counts, just mainly in our head, or we get our TMO to tell us. And that's really not about, it's not referring to a certain amount of penalties, but it's, okay, out of those penalties, how many of them are down inside the 22?
Yeah.
How many of them are for killing the ball, you know, not rolling, going off feet, you know, those negative penalties? Mm. So we'll discuss that at halftime, because we want to make sure that, you know, if there are trends in the game, that we're not missing them. So, for example, if every time, you know, a team gets down to the 22, are they intentionally killing the ball? Or is that when all of a sudden we've got four or five penalties? Do we need to therefore start talking to the captain? Do we need to start escalating? You know, often that's why we'll pull you out and say, look, mate, there's too many down here. The next one might be a yellow card.
Yeah.
So those are all the discussions that if we haven't had that in the first 40 minutes, we haven't picked that up as a team, we'll have that at halftime. So we'll talk about trends at the scrum, trends at the line out, trends at the tackle, how are we doing? And often it's, you know, if it's yep, keep that standard, keep going well, then, you know, that will take into the next 40 minutes. But often sometimes at halftime, you know, that's why it's great having guys that you trust and guys you worked with. You know, they'll say, look, Ben, for example, your scrum call is just a bit too quick. You know, that's why we're getting a lot of collapsed scrums. The collapsed scrums aren't because of the players. It's actually because your crouch bind set is too fast. Mm. So the players actually can't get, you know, good stability.
Just on that, putting your hands up, I felt like during Super Rugby Aotearoa, there was like a genuine collaboration between, like, I'd say, coaching staff of teams, players and the referees. And it felt like everyone, I don't know, did you feel there was a difference there in that collaboration? And
I think it was the
understanding each other.
Yeah, that was massive for us. I feel like, you know, we traditionally always have one meeting at the start of the year with coaches and referees, and we all agree and we go, yeah, it's great. And then as we go throughout the competition, we sort of veer off. But the beauty of having, I guess, the Seoul New Zealand competition this year, there was a massive buy-in from coaches, and I think probably players as well. So the coaches consistently kept in contact with us around what they were seeing in terms of the game. Because, you know, we told them, it's like, guys, we're the servant, you know, we're the messengers. Tell us how you want us to referee it, and we'll referee it for you like that. So, you know, there were you know, obviously all the Super Rugby coaches contacted us during the week, and we had meetings throughout the season about how the game was going, what they were seeing, and, you know, what they thought about, you know, the picture of, like, the Jackler, for example. You know, were we getting it right, were we not getting it right? And it was, the beauty about that is, like, when we sit in our referee groups, we talk about it technically from the law book. And we often lose, unless we had someone like, you know, Glenn Jackson in the room, we lost that player or that coach's perspective or understanding, okay, this is what a team's trying to achieve. So that understanding for us is really key because, you know, we're trying to, you know, referee the game, obviously for the law, but for the game and the players as well, so that they can actually play a good game of rugby. So that was a massive change this year, you're right. And I think, you know, we fed back after every game to the coaches around, you know, key decisions that we made in the game that were right, were also ones that were wrong as well. So on Monday, when you guys had your training sessions, you know, you didn't have to, you know, retrain things from an error that we made. You know, we could just put our hands up and say, look, guys, yeah, we got that wrong. What you did there was right. So, yeah, don't worry about it. You know, sorry.
But I also felt on the flip side for us at training, there was a harder standard because the coaches knew exactly what areas you guys were confident in nailing. We couldn't get away with it at training, you know, like it was, trainings were just as ruthless as a game, you know, in terms of, you know, we had Tana as our ref and he was blowing the whistle and, you know, but it prepared you to be able to, I suppose, handle it better as a player for the weekend, but also a greater understanding and appreciation of, you know, so from a refereeing role and how many things you've got to look at is massively challenging.
Yeah, I'd love to get that alignment, eh? Like, it showed that once you get that, you get a great competition. And I think having Tana at referee would be pretty good as well.
You don't argue with him.
No, he's yelled at us a few times. It's been interesting.
I'd imagine you wouldn't want to mic him up if you were to put him on a television refereeing
Not when I'm trying to creep a little bit offside to get the run of play. But no, he's
Do guys
good.
Try
he's
and
awesome.
Be offside, or are they just always trying
to... No, you got to win the... Yeah. There's such a split second, you know, like the way... We reviewers, like you don't want to be caught that one player, you know, back. Yeah. And I think with those new rules, in Super Rugby Aotearoa, it took a while for defences to get used to just having that greater step. But I thought that was a really good adjustment in the game.
Yeah, it was amazing, allowing like, that space. Play.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I remember being assistant referee in one game. I remember just looking down the back feet, and there was pretty much a gap there.
Like a metre by the end of it.
Yeah, so I'm like, I got my flag away, you know, I'm done.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was incredible, and you saw some of the games we got. It was really good, and then when you get that line speed, you realise that actually these guys are starting in the right position. Their line speed's good. So you know, if they make a really good chop tackle, then you know it's great defence. So it's awesome to see.
How much detail do you go in when you prepare for a game like that? Like if you see, for instance, that Argentina's not committing anyone to the rucks, and so they're likely to have a pretty solid defensive line, how much do you scout teams the way that teams scout each other?
Look, we do like part of my preparation would be to watch both teams, you know, the week before, you know, a few of their games and then all their, you know, their set piece stuff like the line out and the scrums. And that's not to get any preconceived ideas about teams or players because, you know, you're watching the Blues play last week, or they're playing a different team this week, you know, so it could be totally different how they play in terms of what they do. The main thing I look for is you know, trends or things that, you know, they do at line out or trends they do within the game that might catch me by surprise. I think as a referee, if you're caught by surprise by a certain move, then you're more likely to make an error. But I also want to make sure that, look, if you're a team that does a lot of moves at the back of the line out, for example, you know, maybe I'll adjust my position and be at the front of the line out more in terms of my setup. So leading into a game, that's the kind of stuff that I'll look at. Okay, where can I be positionally to be in the right position to actually make these kind of calls? The only time where it comes down to an actual team is, I remember a few years ago, I think Italy did the no ruck tactic that you were talking about.
Yeah.
And so they nearly beat England in a Six Nations game, you know, like, and I remember, I think the referee was Romain Poit, and might have been James Haskell or Dylan Hartley, you know, asked him, like, what do we do? And Romain Poit, in his French accent, said, look, I'm not your coach. And that's what happened in the middle of the game. And so I refereed the next weekend, Italy versus France. So I knew that Italy were potentially going to do the same thing again. So, you know, I did a lot of pre-work watching them and when they did it, and, you know, got in touch with their coaches to make sure that, look, this is technically how you need to do it if you want to do it correctly. So there's a lot of work going into that game in terms of how I planned. And then, you know, we came out and we did the game, and I think they did it once or twice, so, you know, there's no massive issue. So it's just really around, you know, new things that a team might employ. Because otherwise, you know, as a referee, we understand our philosophies around how I referee the scrum, the tackle. I'm going to do the same thing no matter what. And that's why I think it was a lot easier refereeing your own country, because actually you're just out there refereeing the same pictures that you would normally referee if it was a Super Rugby game or another test match anyway.
Do you carry the law book with you? You know, do you go to bed and read a chapter each
night?
Mate,
the law book's in my head, you know, so that's what we tell any captain if they ask. But we do. We have to understand the law a lot. You know, we have to do, there's a law exam that you have to do at the start of every year, and you've obviously got to pass that. But there's the law, but then there's all these new interpretations that they bring out, and that's the big thing that, for example, this year, you know, we had to, you know, the law book's about that thick, but you probably only use about that much in a game of rugby. Mm. If we wanted to use the law book in every game as it was written, there'd be 50, 60 penalties, and, you know, no one would actually get the ball in hand as soon as people went off their feet at the ruck. You know, you'd blow a penalty, and that's the problem, is, you know, there's, you know, the interpretation and what you see and what you miss is, you know, that's the we can get, you know, errors and consistency between referees potentially. So yeah, for this year, and you guys would have had to deal with it playing, you know, there's a lot of interpretation that we had to try and, you know, get on in terms of the jackler, in terms of, you know, players cleaning coming in from the side, cleaning out. I think I penalised you, Chiefs, in the first game. Yeah, the Chiefs. I'll talk about that now. Where, man, you blew up, and then I was like, "Nah, man, I've nailed that." You know, I actually thought I'd nailed that decision, and then because I was right behind you when you did that, and then I watched on
bloody good cleaner.
It was a bloody good cleaner on review. I looked at that, and you got the arm under the player. I was like, "Oh, damn, that's going in the email to the coaches." You know,
yeah, Tom did come up to me and he said, because I was spewing, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Because like Tom's. Yeah, if you give away a penalty, it's quite a big thing for you as a person as playing in a review.
Yeah.
You know, he calls them DAPs, dumbass penalties. And it's like, if you have one of them, it's like a real big black marker, it's your name. So there's a lot of players out there going, "Oh, I don't want a DAP," you know. Yeah. And that's all I was thinking then, is I didn't know either. Like, I was like, "Oh, it's a good clean," but because of the interpretation of the law, it was a bit grey.
Yeah, yeah.
And I started, you know, I was like, "Oh, man," and I said to him after the game, I was like, "Oh, I did that dumb penalty." But then he came up and said that you had my back, so cheers.
That was my dad. Yeah. that's the thing, eh? Like, and, you know, it took us a few weeks as referees, and I think players, you know, all of us to sort of adjust and then meet in that happy medium around, you know, what we were seeing. Because
do you reckon it got there in the end?
Yeah, I think we got really close. Yeah. I think especially with the jackler picture, I reckon, because in round one, if you remember, man, like if you put a fingertip on the ball,
you got a penalty.
It's like, we had about 35 penalties in the game. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, you went back to the old school sort of two hands on the ball, you're tugging and you still didn't get rewarded. So, you know, we seesawed a little bit. But as players adapted and as we adapted, I think we did find that happy medium. And, you know, a lot of countries around the world who was watching the rugby down here, the referee's got a bit of a head start because of, you know, we were actually telling them, okay, we went through that process. This is the gold standard that you need, and this is how you should be looking at it in terms of your pictures.
How did that play out for you guys? Because my memory was, you know, it was getting hammered at the start, and by the end, it wasn't getting hammered. The conversations behind closed doors, were they like, "Hey, let's loosen off, guys," or, you know, "Let's continue with the same consistency," because people always just say, "Be consistent, that's all we want." Like, how do you play that out as a referee, talking to other referees, talking to your bosses, and coaches and players now behind closed doors to make sure that the evolution isn't seen as inconsistency?
Yeah, it's tough. Like it was, you know, we came in really, really hard, but we just, like, in that first round, but we weren't sure about how hard, like what hard was, you know, because we were trying to still understand about what is the picture that we must penalise. So I think by the end of the season, I think that's why we did kind of get there. We keep getting told by coaches, like, just keep going hard at it, because, like, often, I think in years that gone by, you know, we've done it for about a few rounds, and then we've relaxed, and then, you know, so coaches and players were potentially waiting for us to just relax again. But, you know, they were telling us, keep going hard, we're going to adapt. And then I think after about around, you know, four or five, you know, we stayed at sort of that understanding, but, you know, we got a sort of a bit more accurate in what we're trying to do. And then the players continued their consistency around it, and we got that happy medium where, you know, we weren't giving as many penalties at the end of the competition because players were better at it. And so, therefore, it made our job easier. Like, we didn't need to penalise a lot. They understood what they were trying to achieve, and we actually understood the decision that we're giving. So that's why I reckon that it got really good by the end of the season. And, you know, we saw, you know, we landed the Mitre 10 Cup, and I think the referees below, the professional referees, were able to see that. We were able to, like, give our learnings to them. And then, you know, they were able to sort of hit the ground running in the Mitre 10 Cup comp.
Do you mentor those guys? Like, how does that work as far as the development of referees? We hear a lot about the development of players, but with refs, does it work that way?
Yeah, this year was great. I mean, Zoom and, you know, online video, like, conferencing opened our eyes to be able to, like, you know, just be able to talk, like, you know, sort of weekly or fortnightly. So we often had a lot of meetings around how the game was going and, you know, the trends that we were seeing. And, you know, there is a good group of referees within New Zealand. You know, we're pretty tight that, you know, if I've got questions, you often get an email or a phone call about someone about their game, or they might watch something that you did in the weekend. And, you know, they might, you know, ask you a few questions on Monday about, you know, like, was that a penalty against James Parsons? And, you know, you'd say, "No, mate, that one wasn't. And he goes, "Good, I didn't think that was either." So even the younger guys were thinking, you know, so There's a lot of good collaboration, I think, in New Zealand rugby, especially with the referees across all the competitions, you know, male, female, sevens and 15s as well. So it's been really good.
I remember I was in Japan a couple of years ago when there was a couple of All Blacks tests up there, and we went down the road after the game and got on the piss. And three referees turned up at that bar. It was Marius Jonker, Rasta, and the other Marius. What's his surname?
Marius van der Westhuis. Yeah, I was probably going to tell you the three surname.
Yeah. And they were there on the piss. And we ended up getting on the piss with them all night long.
Probably Jaco Piper wasn't there as well. It was probably at the bar down the road.
Probably. And one of the things Marius Jonker said to me was that there are some brutal WhatsApp groups where the refs are just paying each other out. Is there a little bit of that going on?
Yeah. I mean, you got to be able to laugh at yourself and have a bit of fun, eh? Like, we got obviously groups that you know, to keep in touch, you know, around games and decisions, you know, we keep in touch around, you know, what we saw, or if we have to send videos out to each other, we do that. And obviously we especially had that at the World Cup in Japan. But you know, there's a lot of banter. They're just decent guys as well. You know, a lot of the English referees, they bring in a lot of humour as well. So you do, and I think if you can't laugh at yourself, you know, then you're not in the right game. So, you know, you might make an error in a game. Like, I got a lot of stuff for that Fiji and Australian game that I did at the start of the World Cup. And, you know, I got a bit of stick for that. And you just got to smile at it. You know, it's happened. And you move on because, you know, you'll be able to get the boys back, you know, later on with a few games after that.
The players must like that, though, those human touches. Like, I mean, the low five obviously got a fair amount of coverage. But as far as you guys are concerned, having a little bit of a rapport and, you know, just an understanding that we're both human probably makes a big difference to the way you relate to the ref.
I think it's massive. I think, and you spoke about, I think it was Angus Gardner and that player management. I think it's crucial to not get, you know, one, to let the game flow, but also there's not too much of a conversation in the middle of a game. You know, you understand where the ref's came from, you understand where the captain's coming from, and it's sort of short and sharp. If you don't have that, how can you, you know, trust each other? Because you still got to trust the process. Mm. You got to trust the ref. Yes, you'll challenge it, and yes, you'll pose the question. Yeah. But once the question's answered, you got to move away and go. And I think having that ability to connect, you know, before and after the game, and making sure that relationship's right is crucial.
Yeah, and that's one of the, for me, like that, I see that as one of the biggest things in the game is that relationship between the captain. Because, like, my job out there is just to make a decision based on what I saw. And, you know, I don't want a team to be negatively influenced from that, you know, for the rest of the game. I want to be able to actually give that message to the captain so that they can help, you know, the team. Like, this is what I'm seeing, deliver that to your team. And I think, you know, that two-way relationship is really important because, as you said, you know, if the captain asks, you know, poses questions, you know, you got some really smart captains now. They know the law and, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're right. And it's not that, you know, they might not be able to change that decision for you right then and there, but, you know, they can definitely plant the seed of, okay, how am I seeing those pictures, you know, for the rest of the game? And, you know, Nigel Owens has just announced his retirement. I think he's just one of the best. He's, what you see of him on the field is how he is off the field. And I think, you know, that's really important because the game happens so quickly. If you're not your natural self on the field, and you're trying to be someone else, you're trying to be what you think a referee should be like, and it's really tough. Like, A, when you get in the heat of the moment, but B, when you've got, you know, a captain coming at you and challenging you or asking you questions about, you know, the decisions that you're making.
Because there was one instance, and we spoke about it on here, I think it was Michael Hooper, it might have been to Paul Williams, and there was a number of penalties, and I think it was against Argentina, and he goes, oh, mate, you know, we need reward for that, challenged him. And I think Paul was like, okay, mate, yeah, this is what I've done for it, this is what I've seen. And then he went again, he goes, no, I've given you my answer, and walked off. And I thought that was quite good because it was just really succinct, and it was like, okay, Michael's trying to challenge for his country, which is great, but it actually, no, I've given you my answer now, and now we've got to move on, which I thought was quite strong and powerful. I don't know if you remember that.
And I do remember that. So that was out.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, that was the Argentina game.
Yeah.
Argentina-Australia, and it was in Newcastle, and it was a really good example of just how to manage a captain. You know, like, a captain's doing their job, but as a referee as well, you know, you got to respect that, but give the information to the captain. So I think, you know, some referees or a wee while ago, you know, often a referee might even just say, no, I'm not going to talk to you now.
Yeah.
But if it's the right moment to be able to talk to you, then yeah, you should have that relationship. You should have that communication with the captain, because generally, Michael Hooper's probably just asking. He's like, mate, look, is this enough penalties down here, or what do we need to do to change? So he can feed that to his team. His coach is probably in his ear about, you know, asking the referee as well. So it's important. It's an important part of the game. And I think, you know, the respect that is there between players, captains and referees at the moment is excellent. Mm. You know, all you need to do is go and watch football and, you know, see that, yeah. You know, how they do it. Like, there's no talking between players and referees, so you know, it must be really difficult for players to actually understand what's going on, and even for referees to get that buy-in. You know, so you know, we're really privileged in the game that we're involved in.
What's the professional boundary? Like, are there players that you're mates with off the field?
I think, like, one thing that we got to remember is that, you know, you're always a player, I think, in the public spotlight, and I think you're always a referee as well, especially when you're doing test matches and games. So, you know, there's certainly guys that I grew up with who, you know, playing Super Rugby, playing Mighty 10 Cup. And I guess over time, as you referee for long enough, you get to know guys, you know. So you never be rude, like, it's always a hello, but, like, you wouldn't be seen going out with them after the game. You know, you probably wouldn't be seen before the game with them as well, unless you're doing, like, a meeting with the coach. So you always have to be switched on, especially, you know, in those environments, you know, around World Cups, around Test matches. It doesn't mean to say, no, like, we don't go out and have fun, you know, within our own referees, but actually that's probably my team now, you know, so you spend more time with your friends and that, so, you know, you enjoy your time with them after a game. So yeah, there's definitely, you know, professional boundaries that you got to keep up with.
We mentioned before, we touched on it, the referee TMO-AR interaction and the relationship between the three of them. And I suppose one of the things that was a big talking point this year was where one's job starts and the other one finishes. Yep. When you mentioned Dane Coles, you know, and you, I think you awarded that a try or said, I'm happy with the grounding, and then upstairs said, actually, let's have a bit of a look. Is it the right balance, do you think, using the entire team as a team? So, you know, as the ref, your call is just a guideline almost to the decision?
Yeah, look, I think we're going in the right direction. You know, like, there's so much technology available now, like camera angles, replays, and like the speed of decision that we can get from one angle is generally pretty quick. So, you know, often we get criticised for using the TMO too much, and I think that argument was correct a few years ago when we had a lot of TMOs coming in to check potential foul play that was happening in the field, and like we'd then look at on the big screen, and it's really a nothing, you know, like, you know, there's marginal high contact. It's really just to play on. But we've stopped the game for 3 minutes. I think when that happened maybe once or twice in a game throughout Super Rugby, that's when people started, you know, blowing up. But, you know, they'll also blow up as well if we, you know, there was a try in the corner and we awarded it. But, you know, actually there was a foot out in touch or, you know, something like that. So we've got to get that fine balance of, you know, when we use the TMO to actually get the right decision. Like, we don't want to negatively influence the game as referees by making the wrong decision on the field, especially when a replay shows that we can be right. So I think we're going in the right direction, because now we've actually got referees who are going to be are in the TMO box. So traditionally we had, you know, TMOs, but now, for example, we rotated in Tri-Nations. We've actually got a professional referee who's been in all those meetings, who understands foul play, who understands the game, to be able to make those decisions. So the way we might be able to shorten that up is that beforehand it would only be for foul play. It would go upstairs, the TMO would show us the angles, and then, you know, we would make the decision on the field because we're the referee. Sometimes that was hard because we're looking, you know, 50 metres away at a screen about the size of that. So that was always difficult. But now, because we've got referees, so because I might be in the TMO box now, there's no reason why that, you know, I couldn't just make the decision for the guy in the middle of the field. We look at one angle, like, yep, that's play on, yep, that's yellow card, and then we get on with it. And that might speed the game up a bit more.
How does sitting in the TMO box change the way that you ref on the field? Does it give you a slightly different perspective?
Yeah, it's given me a huge understanding for, you know, the difficulty that they have. You know, like, sitting in the TMO box, you know, because I TMO'd the New Zealand-Argentina game for the first time. So I sat on the sideline in Super Rugby to do it, but then now I was up in the box, you know, with, you know, all the different angles, and you're sort of going back and forth. And it's a real fine art around how much detail you actually go into. Because, you know, if you slow-mo'd and freeze-framed every tackle, every ruck, you could find something. So you really just want to make, you know, get that big picture. And I think that's the benefit of having a referee in the TMO box, is that actually, you know, we do understand that big picture stuff because we have to referee that on the field. So now I've got the benefit of being able to do a, you know, cheeky little replay. Yeah, that's pretty good, you know. Like, I'd love to do that live. So, you know, having my mate doing that now for me, who's a, you know, like a Paul Williams or an Angus Gardner, I think, you know, really good for the game. So I think we'll be able to speed it up. And, you know, with that teamwork, I think it's going to help the game out big time.
From a player's point of view, is that the way you'd like to see it?
Yeah, I think, look, from a player's point of view, I suppose you just want the right decision. Yep. And especially when the game's on the line, like, you know, for a try or a yellow card, that can be quite beneficial. So you want the right decision. But I can also understand it from a fan's point of view in terms of that time. When you look at the pressure, I suppose, if I reference the NRL of this, they call it the bunker, and how quick they've been demanded to do it. And sometimes it still doesn't, they're still talking about it on a Monday, do you know what I mean? So I think it's a fine balance between, not rushing it, but getting it done at a pace like the NRL trying to do to where we're at the moment. And I agree that now you've got the referee up in the TMO, the connection you clearly have as a group, as a team, and that trust, so that I think if you hear, say, Angus Gardner go, nah, mate, that's yellow, you'll straight away won't even need to see it. You'll be like, right, nah, it's yellow, come here, gone, you know, and that just speeds it up. So I think that, from a playing point of view, is the way forward, that group of four working together and staying together.
Because then I know, like, if he's saying it should be a yellow card, I know that because the work we've done during the week in the last 4 weeks, I know that his yellow card is the same as my yellow card if I was looking at the same screen. So I think, yeah, you're right, that's definitely going to speed things up.
But also from a player's point of view, you know, you probably already know it's a yellow card because what you saw of that team working together 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so that's where I just think that consistency creates a lot of trust from player to ref.
Yeah.
And you know what's coming, so nothing surprises. Just like you don't want to be surprised by a line-out move or something, we don't want to be surprised by a decision.
Yeah.
You know, and understanding ref's trends is something that we look at as well.
And I suppose if you're looking upstairs and there's not a nameless, faceless guy in the TMO box, it's a bloke that you deal with all the time. It gives you a certain feeling that there is a responsibility to you as well as the laws from that person because you already have that relationship.
Well, that's what, so in the New Zealand-Argentina game, that's what Angus Gardner said to Pablo Mateta. He was like, oh, don't worry, mate, we've got Ben O'Keefe up in the TMO box. And luckily, Pablo was like, oh, yeah, cool, thanks. It could have backfired on me big time.
But
I think you're right, you know, like... Yeah, you can put a face to it, but you also know that, okay, that's, you know, that's a referee. You know, he knows the laws of the game, actually knows, you know, refereeing at this level. So I think it definitely helps. And, you know, something that the NRL, like, they probably led the way in terms of getting that bunker, you know, organised to be able to make those quick decisions. And they've sort of done some good work in sort of that refereeing space.
Did you like what they did with two NRL referees?
Yeah, I think for NRL, it was really good. There's been a lot of talk around getting two referees in rugby union. I'm not so sure how well that would work the way that it is right now. I think there's a few steps that we should do before that happens. Because I think with NRL, you know, like a lot of that having two referees came out of, you know, making sure there's someone on the D line, there's someone also on the attack as well. So it made sense they weren't having to cross over.
And because they
drop
back 10 metres, it's quite a big area of grass that where you guys can stand and one guy's on the ruck.
You're having to cross over quite a lot. Whereas in rugby, you know, there's still a lot of interpretation that happens in a game, especially at the tackle. Now, look, we're trying to get that consistency gap to be a lot smaller between referees. And I think by working together more, we will see that consistency. But I think... you know, it'd be really difficult if you had two referees refereeing the breakdown. My slight interpretation on how much of an effect a tackler has had on arriving players not rolling and allowing a jack on the ball might be slightly different to a Paul Williams if he was refereeing the same game. So I think players would really dislike, you know, me giving a penalty on the halfway and then not being a penalty inside the 22 just because there's another referee there. So I think it's a discussion to have in the future because already we've already got, as I've said, you know, two referees who are assistant referees on the sideline. So I might be the assistant referee, Paul Williams might be the assistant referee, and Brendan Pickerell might be the referee. So what we actually need to do is, instead of just us guys on the sideline, you know, focusing on, you know, offsides, we firstly need to get a lot better at working on offsides, like kick chase and ruck offsides first. And like, once we could, if we could do that, and we can, you know, offer more input to the referees on the middle of the field, then I think that's going to actually help. And it'll probably take away the need for those two referees, because I think a lot of the argument around two referees is the game's so quick, so the referee's missing, you know, potentially some decisions. Well, you know, a few years ago, it used to be just the referee did everything on the field. Mm. Now we're encouraging, look, you got the two guys on the sideline, have as much input as you can, communicate, you know, we're all mic'd up. Feed in everything that you're seeing so that we can actually make better decisions for the game. So we already have three referees on the field. Mm. We just really need to open up the floodgates in terms of, you know, what they can rule on.
How constant is that chatter? Like, if I'm sitting here in this chair, I could be talking to you and getting a director's message in my ear at the same time.
Yep. Yeah,
is that what it's like for you? You're thinking, talking, hearing, all of those things are happening all at once while you're trying to make your decisions?
Yeah, so it's like, for me personally, like, I like that, because, and I tell my assistant referees and my TMO, I say, guys, I want to know what you're thinking constantly, every single moment of the game, so that for contextually, I know exactly what's going on, big picture. I want to know what the TMO's thinking at downtime, you know, because, you know, you're seeing it from the TV angle. And I also want to know, you know, from my assistant referees, you know, how are you finding space? What is the scrum like on your side? So it doesn't necessarily happen live, but certainly during, you know, the front of the line out, time off, after tries, you know, I'm always talking, always asking my ARs to feedback that information, because, you know, again, like, I trust the guys on the sideline. They'll be seeing things slightly different to me. And I'd rather them tell me that I'm making incorrect pictures, or actually, yes, space is really good. So I'd rather know that, so then I can, you know, put my focus elsewhere. So I think, you know, there's a lot of chatter. I think we're encouraging more chatter. They used to be pretty quiet, and you know, potentially, you know, if you're listening to us on the sideline, you know, you might even, you know, take the earpiece out. You know, I'd love for that to happen, because it means we're actually communicating a lot. And, you know, giving that feedback so that we can, you know, make right decisions. Mm.
So how long does a referee go for? Like, what is the length of a professional referee's career now?
Well, it changes, you know, like, it could be one game, it could be 1 year, it could be as Nigel Owens is 49, so he's just retired from international games.
It's
after,
impressive when you think of it.
It's unbelievably impressive. Like, I didn't realise how impressive it was until you realise how hard it is actually to get to test match level. Mm. Like, you've got to work really hard, you've got to jump through a lot of hoops, you've got to get through a lot of games to get to that level. And then to actually stay at that level for the, I think, 19 years that he did, or 18 years that he did, I think he went to 3 World Cups. Now, I think that's even harder. To actually, you know, to go through those big games where the whole world's watching, the whole world's criticising every decision. So to continue on like that just shows the calibre of, you know, those top guys that are doing those games internationally, you know, year after year after year. So, you know, like, it's really limited only by your body. So Nigel Owens, you know, he's worked really hard to keep fit, injury free, and, you know, he can still referee a test match really well. You know, he refereed one of the fastest test matches a few years ago, that All Blacks South Africa game. And, you know, apart from a bit of cramp in the last 5 minutes, he got there. So you can keep going. It's really just down to your performances. Are you still selected? And if your body stays up to it.
So that kind of form, is it easy to keep up? You know, we see players have got 10, 15 years and they'll have their ups and downs, you know, where how they go as a ref, consistently being at that high caliber. I mean, do you see yourself as having form?
Yeah, you do. Like, I mean, a lot of it is just up to the game, though, as well. You know, so a lot of the times, if the game goes well, you know, sometimes that reflects on the referee too. If it's a scrappy game where actually, you know, you referee a scrappy game really well, sometimes, like, it just doesn't look like you refereed well. But, you know, once you go into the review and the detail with your coaches and our assessors, you know, they always look at the fine detail of the game. And are we consistently getting things right? Was the foul play decisions that we did last weekend, for example, the weekend before, were they correct? And if you're still ticking those boxes, you know, there is that review behind the scenes that is why someone like Nigel Owens, Wayne Barnes, Jaco Piper, the French referees, you know, that's why they're at that top level. So despite from what you see from the outside, you know, for them to stay there, they're actually continually getting those decisions right. And, I think it gets easier the more experienced you are. So, you know, like, technically they may not know or may not referee technically as well as probably someone just entering the realms of test refereeing, but they've been through, you know, they've seen that breakdown decision before, they've seen that foul play decision before, and they know what the right decision is based on experience. So with that experience, it just gets them through those top games. And that's why I think Nigel Owens, he could probably, if his body kept up with it, he could probably referee for another 5 years. Someone like Wayne Barnes, you know, he'll referee the next World Cup. But he's at a point now where his mistakes, like a player, his mistakes get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's done more and more games. And, you know, he's in a smart position where he's probably, he's in that group of actually, you know, when we talk about law interpretations and law changing, he's part of the group that's making those decisions with players, coaches, and World Rugby. So, you know, he's probably doing it in a way that's going to help him out as well. You know, it's the benefit is referring.
Has that always been part of it, that the refs have had a bit of input into the laws?
Mate, no, to be honest, like it's surprising, but it hasn't always been the case. It's only really been the last few years that, you know, we've got someone like a Wayne Barnes and a Jaco Pieper who've put their hands up and said, look, we want to be part of this, because we want to be able to referee what the players and the coaches want. But I think, you know, it is good for the players and coaches to hear how that is possible. Like, okay, how would we do that in terms of doing that on the field? I think, as you said, you know, like when you guys are training, you train to how we interpret decisions as well. So. As long as, you know, if we can articulate that, then it's going to make it easier to coach and then easier to train and implement on the field.
Mm, long term, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's better for the game if we can all just be in one big silo. You know, we'll only have a small part of it as referees. Like, we don't want to be any bigger than what we need to be. But I think it will definitely help the game.
I suppose the thing is that you guys cop the impact of the laws, don't you? I mean, you only referee the laws that you're given. You don't make the laws. But in a lot of ways, you guys are the experts on the laws because you're the ones who have to infiltrate them week by week and have the best feeling for it. So the idea it took this long is kind of crazy.
It is a bit. But it's just, I think it's the way that rugby's going. You know, it is a professional sport now, and you know, people are trying to get it right for, you know, spectators, and they want it implemented so that it happens quickly. So, you know, we've got, you know, guys are involved now, like Joe Smith. You know, they're really into, you know, with your experience as a coach, you know, he's heading up high performance world rugby, with coaches, with players, with referees. There's going to be a really good environment, I think, where we can actually get the game moving forward positively, because it is, you know, we've got to try and market it against all these other sports as well, you know.
Yeah.
So NRL's gone through changes, even cricket's gone through changes, because, you know, there's only a small pot of money that is going to go to sport, you know, in the world. So I think, you know, we do have to keep moving forward with the game. And, you know, if we bring in law changes next year and more interpretations, you know, it should be to benefit the game so that, you know, people are going to watch it.
How much of that, you mentioned like the big part of the book that you don't use.
Yeah.
How much of that would you get rid of? If you were put on that panel, you know, how much would you simplify the union in order to make it an easier watch and easier to understand and easier to attract those people who are on the periphery who watch the game and go, I don't really get that.
Yeah, look, there'd be a lot of stuff that I think they've already tried to simplify. This year, it was about reinforcing the actual law, okay, because we probably got loose over the last few years.
Mm.
So making sure that the tackler does get out, making sure that players do enter through the gate and stay on their feet. You know, we sort of got quite loose over the last few years because, you know, at the expense of, you know, trying to get this flowing game of rugby. I think we can still get that if we, you know, if the referees sort of hold up their end of the bargain and penalise it, and then the players can actually do what they want to do. But, you know, you know, probably over the next few years, there's going to be just additions to the law book to actually make the game better. We saw last year, or this year, in Super Rugby Australia, they had the 40-22 law, they had the goal line dropout law, you know, so sort of moving closer to the league, which you'd be pretty stoked about.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there could be, you know, future things like in other sports, you know, in NRL, they've got captain's challenge.
Yeah.
In cricket as well, you know, so is that something that we could bring in, you know, into rugby, you know, in the next few seasons to stop potentially those, you know, game-defining decisions, errors that referees can make, you know, with 2 minutes to go.
But also, do you reckon it would cut out a lot of discussion? Because, like, watching the NRL with the captain's challenge, you know, like, say, a Cam Smith or someone was saying something to the referee, he was like, challenge it then.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm all right. You know, so it actually gets rid of all the questioning, because you've got the tool there if you want to use it.
I think two ways as well, because then when Cam Smith, you know, challenges the referee, and the referee's found out to be right or wrong,
Yeah. Well,
no one's talking about the referee anymore. Everyone's just talking about, oh, that decision in the game was correct. They got it right. So I think, you know, there's tools like that can be put in place that's going to help the game. And if it's to be able to get the right decisions, if it's to be able to speed the game up, then, you know, there's ways that we can to, you know, make the product, which is rugby, a lot more enjoyable to watch.
That's the balance, isn't it, really? Speeding the game up and getting the decision right. Those two things don't necessarily go hand in hand.
No, they don't, and that's, you know, if we go back to like the TMO discussion at the start, we've got to find a way where we can get those TMO decisions quick and right so that we can actually I think, you know, if we're just looking at speed of the game just for the expense of a decision, well, I don't think people don't argue about the game being too long more than they would about decisions being wrong and a team losing a game because of a wrong decision that we could have checked. You know, it could have taken 15 seconds and then we would have been right. So yeah, there's that balance that, you know, there's a lot of guys that get paid a lot more than I do to be able to come up with, really.
Get the top of that pay grade.
Yeah,
absolutely. So those are things that maybe could happen for next year, the year after, whatever. What happens for you now during the preseason? The players obviously go away and train and they spend a couple of months. I think we're not back till February 26th?
Late well, we're back in pre-season. Early Jan.
Yeah. So games start at February 26th. What do you do now to prepare over the next 2 months?
Look, I'll definitely be having a few weeks off. Just because, you know, it's been a long year, it's been a difficult year for everyone. So, probably like the players, we have a few weeks off, enjoy Christmas, New Year's, you know, home with friends and family, and then it's amazing. You know, then we get straight back into it. You know, the whole year just starts again. Like, no longer is rugby just a winter sport. So we'll get together as a group of professional referees for pre-season in Jan. A lot of that will be, you know, we'll get together in Wellington and you know, go over, okay, how are we going to hit the ground running from what we learnt last year. To any new interpretations this year, and just start like really just putting, you know, brainstorming, okay, how we're going to start the season. So we'll still train over the summer period. You won't be doing as many Broncos as we probably did this year, but it'll just be, you know, getting out, you know, some maybe longer distance runs, you know, going to the gym, just keeping that fitness up so that we can, you know, hit pre-season and be ready to go, because I think there's pre-season games sort of mid-February all around the place. So yeah, we're back into it in about 5 weeks, and then depending how the year goes, you know, we'll be talking this time next year, and we wouldn't, you know, we've only just stopped the week before, so, you know, it'll be the whole season again.
Yeah. And your fitness levels, who's the benchmark that you've got to meet fitness levels in New Zealand? Who's the number one fittest, fastest athlete ref?
It's Paul, Mr. Fitness Williams. Yeah, he's pretty good. He's like a little whippet. He sort of can get around the field pretty quick. James Dolman as well. He spends a lot of time sort of more on the upper body, but he can still get around pretty quick as well.
You don't need guns as a referee.
Jerseys, you know, you got to make sure, you know.
You get a bit of TV time, but no, I've got him past those times now, so I'll just be the older guy that will just cruise around with the boys, and we'll be fine.
You don't want to be the Bill Harrigan, Steve Walsh ref sex symbol.
No, we'll leave that to some of the younger boys coming through, maybe.
Well, on that note, thank you very much for joining us today, Ben, and once again, Jibber. Cheers, mate. It's been a good year.
Oh, it's been great.
It's been a good year, and we'll be back next year, so hopefully you'll be back with us with the Aotearoa Rugby Pod, beginning just before the season kicks off at late February.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.